Dr. Charles Morgan is a professor of with the Department of National Security at the Henry C. Lee College of Criminal Justice and Forensic Sciences at the University of New Haven. He also teaches at Yale and joins us on the phone line right now. Dr. Morgan, nice to have you with us this morning. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much. So explain your background a little bit and the kinds of studies that you've done so we better understand when you explain to us how the human brain actually works.
Yes. I specialized in psychiatry. I graduated from Yale in 1990 and joined an institution that was linked to Yale called the National Center for Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. It had been created by Congress so that we could investigate the neurobiology of the brain and figure out whether this illness that many combat veterans had was something different from depression or schizophrenia or anxiety. And so as part of those studies throughout the 1990s, where we would scan brains, raise people's adrenaline by giving them certain chemicals in their system like yohimbine, we were beginning to understand how parts of the brain respond to your stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline. And then by about 1997, there were no wars going on at the time. I wanted to study people with more high stress or more realistic stress than we could generate in the lab. And I began to study active duty special operations people, specifically participating in a certain kind of training called survival school training, which is designed to help them know what to do if they're ever captured and what the Geneva Convention rules are. But as part of that training, they get exposed to a number of stressors, whether it's being shoved underwater, whether it's being physically struck and interrogated, some very dramatic and physically intensive and mentally intensive experiences. And for about 4 years, from 97 to 2001, I did a series of studies measuring hormones, physiology, brain functioning in those participants to see whether or not we could learn something genuine about stress. And then that's turned into like a 20-year career history working with the special operations community in many different venues. But over and over and over again now, we find the very similar or same thing. There's some little nuances along the way. But the big picture that we now know for sure is that although we all have brains and we think we know how they work, they don't work like we think they work when we're under stress. Adrenaline and cortisol, which are very important to us to survive under stress. Cortisol turns off your immune system. It mobilizes, glucose or energy for your brain. And adrenaline gets your blood going to your big muscle groups and your pupils dilate. It's as if your body says when you're under stress, it's no time to be digesting food in your stomach or be using your immune system. Yeah. So it diverts all of its resources to things that can help you run or freeze or fight. We call that our fight-flight response. Now, in our brain, there's an area of the brain that's called the amygdala. If you took your finger, don't poke your finger in your eye, but if you pushed your finger straight in, knuckle deep, your fingertip would be poking a part of your brain that we call the amygdala. And it's a center area of our brain where we learn fear. Without it, we can't even learn what to be afraid of. And what's really hardwired in that section of our brain, it's almost like we have pre-programming, is to take over when we're under stress. So our frontal lobes, so if you're a parent and you grab your forehead when you're arguing with an adolescent and say, what in the world were you thinking? And they go, I wasn't. It's true. Their frontal lobes, the area you're grabbing, isn't as well developed in an adolescent or a prepubescent kid. But that's the area of our brain where we can do cool, calm, collected reasoning. And the neuronal wiring in that area of our brain tries to put the brakes on the amygdala to keep it under control. Under stress, adrenaline turns that area of our brain off. And it's not a metaphor. Under high levels of stress, we see that the blood flow to your frontal cortex under really high stress shuts down. We also know that the way the neurons, the electrical activity, when they're communicating with one another, diminishes. And what gets potentiated are all the circuits in our brain that go with habit, that is linked to whatever we practiced before, a lot of. We go to habit behavior, and we are primed to do that freezing, running, or fighting. So our aggression systems, our runaway systems, and our hold really still, maybe they won't see me systems, are all firing.
So if I'm understanding this, then under high stress situations, a portion of the brain where we think we have stored knowledge from training, from past experience, from knowledge, from instruction manuals that you know we may have read how to deal with certain situations, that portion of the brain is momentarily turned off while the high stress situation is going on.
That's correct. And we know that in medicine as well. Even when doctors are stressed, we follow an algorithm, a checklist. We know that works for airline pilots too. When things are under stress, we think we can remember what we know, but we don't. And we resort to anything we've practiced over and over and over again. But still, to correct our brains, we almost need a checklist to go stop, just do what the next thing is on the list. And so in those moments, although later we think, I should have stopped and thought about this, I should have done this, in those moments, that's not the part of our brain that's actually functioning. And so in these situations, when you're under high stress and there's just a few seconds happening where someone's injured or someone's shot or someone's just attacked, we're on automatic mode, whether we like it or not. And later we wonder why people didn't do something differently. And I think what we've learned, and it's kind of humbling, is that we don't have all the capacities that we think we do when we're under stress. I always joke with my friends and I say, under stress, we all get dumber. It's just that I get dumb faster. So my friends look brilliant under stress.
Yeah.
But that part of our brain is just shutting down.
So as this relates to the Adam Toledo case, you had said that teenagers are not fully formed yet. Their brain functions are not fully formed yet. Without passing judgment on what may have happened that night, exactly what may have been happening in the brain of Adam Toledo under the high stress situation that he was under, and what may have been happening in the brain of the policemen who were chasing him down the alley. We could hear them screaming and yelling. They were also under very high stress. We know that there was a millisecond between the time that there was apparently a gun in Adam Toledo's hand to the time that he put his hands above his head and was shot. What may have just talk to me about the brain functions of these two people and what may have been happening.
From a neurobiology perspective, you have two similar humans running down a alley. It doesn't matter that one's an adult and one's an adolescent. The parts of the brain that make us different as adults from adolescents is our frontal lobe, and that's shut off. So you've got two people running that are primed to be in that fight, flight, freeze sort of programming, and they're moving into action. So Adam's running, and he would not have been able to think as clearly either as to what are the consequences if I just don't stop or do this, or do I drop the weapon and keep running if he had a weapon, right? So he wouldn't be thinking clearly either. He would be in reaction mode, just like the police officer in pursuit is really primed from the brain standpoint to be in that reaction mode, react to anything. Because the idea from our brain's point of view, from that area of our brain called the amygdala, is that if you freeze, you might die. For animals who live in the woods, that may not be true. They freeze, the predator doesn't see them. But essentially what you have running down the alley from a neuroscientist standpoint is you've got two humans that are very much the same. They're both operating on these very, very primal areas of your brain that are they're priming you to survive, to achieve a goal and survive.
So, people are saying, why did the officer shoot? The 13-year-old dropped the gun, but if I'm understanding what you have said about how the brain physiologically reacts to moments of stress, he may not have been able to process that because his brain was that shutdown mode, right?
That's correct. The part of his brain that's working will continue. So he's engaging in an action. The realization we have later is nothing like what his brain's capable of doing in that moment in the blink of an eye. I tell people to remember, like, even in a non-stressful situation, if you've ever played that game where you put some money on the table and you can play it with a kid and they'll say, put your hand 10 inches over the $10 bill. I'm going to put my hand 20 inches over it. And when you see me trying to go get the bill, you try and grab it because you're twice as close, right? You're half the distance to the bill.
Right.
They will get it every single time. And it's because of our neuronal wiring. When we start to see the reaction and then decide to grab the money, it's too late. The speed of information processing for our cortex to do that and then initiate moving your hand down to grab it is way too slow. And under stress, it's a bit the same, that when a person stops and is turning, that information processing is too slow to then inhibit the realization is happening too slowly to inhibit the automatic program that kicks in, which is, I'm going to get shot.
Yeah.
He has a weapon, I'm going to get shot. So when, you know, if he was holding a weapon, even in the mind of the police officer, we don't know what he saw, right? But if he believed there is a weapon and now the person has stopped and is turning at him, that automatic programming would kick in to shoot before you get shot. That's partly how the training is all done. So the habit formation in people, whether they're soldiers or police officers, is to remember you can die in a moment. So you've got a threat that suddenly turned, you would kick into that programming to respond. And there later, when we say, and it's influenced by, because we see these still motion, these stills, you know, from the video, oh, he should have stopped. So it's kind of wishful thinking on our part in those rapid, rapid, high stress situations. People aren't capable of doing that.
Like
you said, for the bigger issue, you know, the context is everything, like, you know, why and how do people get so many guns and those kinds of things. But from a neurobiology perspective, yeah, it's impossible to inhibit the response at that moment.
That's what I found so interesting when I saw you talking with Anderson Cooper about this. I appreciate you coming on to explain it to us as well. Something else to just put into the larger discussion about all of this. I know we're going to be hearing a lot more about this here in Chicago, and if you don't mind, I'll check in from time to time and get your reactions to that, if it's all right.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. Charles Morgan, a professor with the Department of National Security, University of New Haven, also teaches at Yale.